outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Are you ready for the 4th of July weekend, Kyle?
I am ready for the 4th of July. My wife and I are going to be spending it in Michigan with family and friends, and I can't wait. I Jess loves the 4th of July. It's one of her favorite holidays, and it sounds like we're going to be out on a boat on Lake Michigan watching fireworks, and so I'm really looking forward to it.
Wow, yeah, sounds fun. I'm getting stuck going to fireworks this year for a long... I'm not a fireworks fan, and not because they're not beautiful. I just have seen a billion fireworks shows in my life, and I've had enough fireworks. Anyway, we're going because we get the kids afterwards. Kids are coming over for a few days, so we're doing a little brief camp grandma and grandpa. So that'll be fun for the weekend.
Camp Jacobson is open for business, huh?
Yeah, and that's on the 3rd. So actually the 4th will be fun because this town here does fireworks on the evening of the 3rd.
Okay.
So they get the fireworks out of the way so people can enjoy the 4th with family. And so we'll be doing that. That's where my daughter lives. And then we'll have the kids for 3 days here. That'll be fun.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Any big plans?
You know, the kids are at such an age now where we don't make the plans. The kids come over with all their favorite things to do at grandma and grandpa's house, and we kind of let them run the days.
Yeah. Oh, very nice.
No plans, just going to enjoy those three delightful children for a bunch of time. So that'd be great. So you were already traveling last week. You were out in Minnesota doing something.
I was. So I had the opportunity to go out and work with some good friends of mine. We did a training at a school district in the St. Paul area. And we were training them on how to integrate a strengths-based approach in the educational process.
Okay, that means nothing to 90% of the people, isn't it? A strength-based approach to what are you talking about?
So let me unpack that a little bit. So we use Clifton Strength Finders is one of the top strengths assessments in the world. It actually is used in Fortune 500 companies, and the whole perspective is they interviewed thousands of world leaders that were successful in a very wide variety of different industries and career paths. And they identified 34 top strengths that people do so naturally that they don't even think about it. But they have to have an avenue to be able to live out of these strengths. They're those things that bring them that life, that joy that they thrive in when they have an outlet for.
So people don't have all 34 of these, right?
No.
Identify the two or three or whatever makes your life work?
Yep. We primarily work with the top five strengths because that's usually the things that you need to have an outlet for in your life or you won't feel that wholehearted fulfillment. And so what we did was we were working with the administration, the counseling team, and the student services team, and we actually took them through the assessment and help them understand how they work together as a team, how to interact with students, how to be able to view students through a different lens, because we're coming out of a global trauma. And especially in the education world, there was some really major challenges on how to help students. Students were going back into unsafe homes. And so then there was a rise in domestic violence and child abuse, but it wasn't being reported because the students were not having access to mandated reporters like they normally would. As students are coming back to their school districts, there's a major push to be able to try to help young people navigate the hard times that they experienced. And what does it look like to be able to give them a positive picture of who they are and how they were able to even work through those challenges? And so a strengths-based approach is based in positive psychology, and it's helping young people identify the top five strengths that God gave them, the combination of strengths that they can use to not only navigate career, but how do they interact positively in relationships? How do they find fulfillment in their life and whatever they're doing, whether it be activities, relationships, career path, etc.? We help them be able to identify those and learn how to use those, putting language around them so they know how to use them and press into them and develop them as they move forward.
So what are your top five, Kyle?
So my top five are strategic, ideation, communication, self-assurance, and empathy.
Wow, what a mix.
That's my top five.
And what are my top five?
I would love to find out, actually. I have some ideas of what some of your top five would be.
I'm sure, like, there are people listening going, well, this, I need this to know this for my fulfillment. What I want to find this out. How do I find out?
So Clifton Strength Finders has a book called Finding Strengths 2.0. That's the gateway. It'll have a code in it. You can take the assessment online. But then what I would highly encourage people to do is find a strength certified coach. And that's what myself and my partners do, is we do individual and corporate coaching and help people identify their strengths and then how they can use their strengths in the world around them.
I'd say it's too late for me to find out.
No, it's never too late. It is absolutely never too late.
I've already been doing what I do for like 68 years, or, well, let's say 50 of those 68 years. Yeah, I don't know if I'd change anything now.
It wouldn't be about changing. It would just be about putting language around what you do very well. So, for example, there's a strength called connectedness, where it's about helping connect different communities and different individuals and people who have like-minded heart, helping build bridges for them to come back together. And so my guess is that would be at least in your top 10 strengths, if not your top five. That would be one of them. There's a bunch of different ones. But yeah, it's just a great resource to help people have a common language on how to identify who God's created them to be and how can they press into that wholehearted, more fulfilling space. It's got the great evidence-based backing on it. So in the psychology world, they want to make sure, is this actually viable? Does it have the research to support it? Or is it just lots of fluff? There's been over 21 million people that have taken this assessment from around the world. So the amount of data that they've collected from individuals on their strengths and the data backing it is substantial. That's why it's one of the best assessments in the world.
But you see a lot of overlap here with finding out who you are in Christ. And, you know, it's not just a secularized approach in your mind.
No, it actually was the founder of it, actually was a believer and was a college professor at Azusa Pacific University. So it actually started as a means of helping people understand who God created them to be. And now it's one of the largest assessments in the world.
Okay. Can you call them and see if they're willing to sponsor this podcast, since we've taken 5 minutes to unpack their approach?
I'll see what I can do.
Okay, great.
And it's not just their assessment that we use. We integrate other things. Myself and the team that I worked with, we all have a background in education. So we were helping to integrate that into the educational process and help them identify what that looks like in the educational world.
Good. And it looks like this is going to open some other doors for you to do some training and whatnot. So that's awesome.
Yeah, really hoping to. Yep.
Yeah. I announced last week that I'm kind of maybe open for travel again this fall. It's been very hard to do. I'm like, even thinking about going to the airport again and flying off somewhere. And then I think about actually being there with people and the kinds of things that happen and really the kinds of things that I discover when I travel. Most of what I've written about when Sarah and I read Live Loved Free and Full, the devotional book I published this year, I remember where I was when that thought first hit my mind, who I was talking to, what group I was with. And a lot of my learning I know comes from the conversations I have with people about the life of Jesus and the things we discover together, whether it's on a podcast like this or traveling around the world. So I'm kind of in that space of, okay, I guess I'm ready to go again. But we are finishing up some things this summer first, and I'm grabbing a little vacation time with family, so probably toward the end of August. And man, I'm telling you, I got more invites already. I have like hundreds that are backed up from years and years, and I kind of threw all that out and just said, you know, I'm going to start fresh. So if you want me to come, let me know. And people are. So I guess there's a need. So Sarah will be happy.
Well, is she wanting to get you kicked out somewhere, or what's going on there?
Part of what helps Sarah work is she loves alone time. She does. She doesn't, like, when I'm traveling, people go, well, but Sarah, she's home all alone. Actually, Sarah enjoys being home and the gardening and the dogs and her life and her friends. She really enjoys having that space. And she's had me around now for 15, 16 months. So I think she's ready for me to do a bit of travel. And it's the grace in our marriage, actually. I look at just the fact that God has called me to go. God has not called Sarah to go. Sarah actually, if I think about her just sitting home lonely because Wayne's gone, I wouldn't travel. I'd be hard. To know that Sarah is as fulfilled. And we talk every day when I'm on the road, so it's not like we lack communication, but the fact that I'm not here is not a burden on Sarah, which is also a joy to know, actually.
And I feel like that empowers you and gives you almost permission and freedom to be able to live out of who God created you to be and to fulfill that passion of being with people and helping people navigate their journeys in Christ and find a more love-saturated experience in the Father heart of Christ. And
also, I get to really give myself when I'm there if Sarah's not with me. If Sarah's with me, because of the nature of her makeup, we need a lot of time for Sarah to process and have some, you know, getaway time, because she needs that to get through a day. She can't fill her whole day with people. When I travel, I stay in people's homes, usually on from 8 in the morning till 10 at night, doing a number of meetings, things, and I'm fueled by that. I'm tired at night, but I'm not emotionally exhausted. If Sarah goes with me, I can do about half of what I do when I'm not. So it's actually, and when we discovered this has been a great gift to our marriage, because for a while I thought, you know, if I'm traveling, Sarah needs to go with me. And Sarah was going with me and being the faithful wife that sits there and listens to her husband share stuff she's heard 500 times. And then somebody wants to take her shopping or she, you know, and all that stuff. And it's like, that's not Sarah's life.
Yeah.
Discovering how God, for what God's asked us to do in the world, He's really equipped us to be inside that together. And together, that means we're not together. Part of that is we spend significant time in different parts of the world, but that's not a burden to either one of us. That's actually a joy. And that doesn't mean we don't miss each other, because we do. Yeah. We'd rather be with each other every night. The last 16 months have been fabulous for me. I've gotten a lot of work done. I've gotten a lot of time with Sarah. Oh, by the way, we finally recorded all the Rafa stuff and the last part of the My Friend Lewis, and I'm editing it all. Should be maybe in a week or so. That'll start. I've got three ones that'll kind of unfold, and I can't wait for people to hear that part of the story. But we digress there. I just been inundated, and in the healing that's gone on in Lewis's heart from this horrible night that his father died, and how he's not carried that well in his life, and how God's kind of set this time for that to be a place of great healing for him. And it's still unfolding. He was over yesterday just sharing some of the things that he's been discovering just recently that's allowing a very traumatic night to become a point of celebration in his heart because of how he got through it and what happened because he got through it. And now with God healing it, it's been awesome. I don't understand why sometimes those things take 30 years to get healed, but they do sometimes.
So I had an interesting conversation that kind of ties those two things together.
Okay.
I was working with a client and they were processing an interesting situation that they have regarding a potential legal marriage. From this person's experience, and it was a pretty painful experience that they had in their family of origin, there was a lot of fear that revolved around marriage. One of the core statements that came out of this conversation was the belief that the pressure of marriage, the vows, the wedding vows, cause a relationship to be heavier and less enjoyable. And that was not the first time that I bumped into that conversation with the millennial generation and some of the older Gen Z students that I've worked with, that's a pretty common theme that I've started to hear bubbling up from people who are in serious relationships and have considered the idea of marriage, but are really reserved from stepping into an official marriage because they feel like it's going to smother or steal the life of the relationship. That dating is actually more fun and keeps the relationship light and joy filled than in a marriage. And so what were your thoughts, especially after, how many years has it been? Over 40, right? With Sarah?
We just celebrated 46 years.
Okay. That's what I thought. I thought it was closing in on 50. So
yeah, well, that just sounds really strange. I remember people had their 50th wedding anniversary when I was a kid and I'm going, those people are ancient. And now I'm almost there. What happened to life? My gosh. So don't say 50. Let's just say 46.
Okay, we'll say 46 for the time being.
Thank you.
So 46 years of marriage, is your marriage still fun?
Oh, it's a ton of fun. and even more fun because of what we've been through together. There've been incredible, hurtful, broken stretches of a relationship being committed to the long haul. So
yeah.
Yes, there have been those moments, but I'm telling you, we probably wouldn't have been here if we hadn't been married and hadn't taken seriously what marriage meant to us, that we're going to get through this. We're not going to just say, oh yeah, this is hard and I'm tired of trying to work this out. We just see things so differently. It's just time to go our own ways. You can do that with other relationships, but the one relationship I can't do that with is Sarah. And so we have got to keep finding our way to us. So when I hear you talk about the commitment to marriage is kind of a fun suck, if that's that's not how you said it, but that's, yeah. I'm going, wow, I would find it just the opposite. It has allowed us to keep having fun 46 years on together. And I've known her for almost 49 years. We dated 3 years before we got married. I see it really opposite than that.
So to a younger audience, why are the vows important?
Well, I'll just share from my upbringing, very religious, right?
Yep.
The vows made sex legal, you know?
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're celibate until marriage. That's the deal. And then when you commit to each other, then that honeymoon and celebration of the sexuality you begin to experience here, to me, that's all wrapped up in it. And I think why the millennials and younger generations have lost it, because sex is just another play thing we do. And we have multiple partners and we, you know, serial monogamy. If we do that, we move from one partner to another. Well, what does marriage mean then?
Yeah.
I always think, what's the ceremony mean? And what's the honeymoon about? I mean, the honeymoon for Sarah and I was the exploration of a new arena in our life that we were not allowed to explore before. And some may call that legalistic and horrible, but it actually allowed a relationship to grow between us without the investment of the emotions of sexuality and the two becoming one in a physical expression that's not there in your heads and heart yet. So I think it served us well. Sarah and I, she's got this project now of wanting to digitize a bunch of our old family pictures. So one night a week, Sarah and I sit down and go through a period in our life and choose which pictures are significant enough to digitize. So we've recently went through our Oral Roberts University dating experience, which every time I see young people dating or college kids, I was such a great time. I loved dating Sarah. I loved being her boyfriend. I loved that whole, we don't know who's feeling what yet and where can you talk about this or not talk about that. I mean, just the joy of being in a relationship with someone, but it had no sexual overtones to it. I mean, we were both, you know, hoping someday, and you're definitely horny at times that you're denying because you have this higher ideal for what marriage is. And I'm going to wait till I have a woman that's going to spend a life with me. Mm-hmm. So I don't look back at any of that as legalistic or onerous or painful. The commitment of marriage to keep sexuality inside a marriage allowed us to date in a way that didn't put that on top of it.
Mm.
And then when we finally said, let's get married, then we opened the door to something that we've been able to grow in for 46 years. Mm. I would love to hear more about why the idea of commitment in a relationship diminishes the relationship.
Mm.
Where do you think that comes from?
So in a lot of the marital and premarital coaching and counseling that I've done and just conversations that I've had with young people, sex is how you start the relationship. There's been a drastic reduction in the value of sexual intimacy with another person.
Right. I'm well aware of that.
But,
well aware of that.
But the big piece is, and this is what is really intriguing, is the emotional intimacy. It's terrifying for them. And it is something that they really struggle with knowing how to do. Because yeah, if you keep the relationship just physical, it's very easy to base the relationship just on the physical intimacy. But when there's the request to actually share the emotional aspect of a person's heart with another person, that's where they really, really struggle. That's where I do most of my coaching, is they don't have or have not had modeled how to have a healthy emotional relationship with another person. in a way that's honoring and encouraging to another, that has vulnerability, that has authenticity. Those are not skill sets, relational skill sets that a lot of my younger clients have been shown or modeled to be able to incorporate in the relationship.
What view of sex doesn't have emotional investment? I mean, that to me, not only have you corrupted the idea of marriage,
yeah,
but now sex is just a physical activity that's primarily selfish driven. I want mm-hmm. my thrill. You know, you're trying to get your thrill, but there's no intimacy, no vulnerability. I think sex is the most vulnerable thing Sarah and I do together. If you're in that without an emotional sense of safety, mm-hmm. then you're ruining sex as well. Now it's just a cheap thrill.
Correct. And that's something Jess and I really navigated in our marriage, because I had not had sex before we got married. Jess had. I struggled more with temptation in regards to pornography and other things. That became more intense after I got married and started having sex with my wife and enjoying sexual intimacy with my wife. Whereas Jess, it was the first time she felt safe and felt and loved and connected in her sexual intimacy in her life. And when we've had conversations with young people about that, why wait until marriage to have sex, that whole conversation, Jess's response is, man, I've never felt safe and never felt more beautiful as a person than in the vulnerability and sexual intimacy that I have with Kyle in our marriage, in the context of covenant and lifelong commitment to one another. And so, like, for me, I had to navigate that part of it on my side, because it's like, oh, I've just had a whole new world opened up to me that I'd spent 27 years guarding myself from, and, you know, and not allowing myself to go there. Now all of a sudden the doors are open. I'm like, ooh, okay, I'm going to have to, there's a whole nother level of guarding my heart now that I'm going to have to find in a different way, which was really intriguing. It kind of caught me off guard, and I'm thankful I had some men around me that helped me navigate that conversation.
It's so weird to think about it being without that emotional safety, without that relationship that's bigger. When you say a relationship starts with sex for these kids, mm-hmm. I just, something dies in me when I hear that. I just went, yeah. Wow, because now you've messed that up. Mm-hmm. For me, there was no better motivation for marriage than I want to make this legal with Sarah. I don't mean just legal legalistically. I mean, before God, I want to be able to celebrate a sexuality with my wife that, oh my goodness, when we think about the growth in that over 46 years of really going major periods of time without really communicating well and knowing what the other person is really touched by, blessed by, fulfilled in, and you're both just navigating, because it is the hardest place to talk about with each other. You know, I heard on a podcast I was listening to this morning, it was a news podcast, but they were reading some news article and said the four most important words in a sexual encounter. And I'm like, well, what are those? And it was, are you enjoying this? Mm. The hosts were talking about how rare that gets asked in that whole vulnerable thing. We're all pretending we know because we've seen it on the Hollywood idea, which is every time I see it in the movies or thing, you know, this couple, they just meet and then they start kissing and then they're just in each other's faces and stripping each other clothes off in 2 minutes. And then they've finished it all in the next 30 seconds. And you're going, really? That's what we're teaching kids and people. Sex should look like this. Just two people, animalistic, unrestrained, can't ripping clothes off because they can't wait to jump into bed with a complete stranger, someone they met 5 seconds before. And I just go, wow, that's, how do we help a generation of people recover the beauty of what God had in mind for sexuality and marriage? And exploring that, like Sarah and I've been able to do for 46 years, and say, all of that life, happiness, fulfillment for Sarah and I has never been better than it is today. Mm-hmm. It's never been better. Not that we didn't have fun back in the days in various ways that we related to each other, But love has deepened. The emotional attachment has deepened. Vulnerability has deepened. We're much more in tune with each other's bodies. If you want to, well, Sarah always hates me talking about this stuff. Don't be talking about that stuff. But we're more in tune, and that's changed over 46 years. You know what? Yeah. Turns each other on 30 years ago is not the same as today.
Yeah.
And flowing with that and continue, I love the way God's invented this, you know, that it takes constant communication and growing and changing and laying down your life to adapt to the other and the other. That's what marriage was all about. It wasn't a matter of convenience. It wasn't just, oh, we like this and that. Then what are we getting married? We're getting married because we live together and we're sharing finances and that's all. I guess we finally should get married and then... And then what? And I guess the fear is, well, then if we decide we don't want to be together, divorce is ugly. We've seen divorce. We don't want to go through it. So if we don't do the marriage thing, we don't have to do the divorce thing. And I get that, because when marriage turns ugly, it really is ugly. When and I've never had an abusive relationship with Sarah. I've had an abusive relationship with other people in my extended family. That's been incredibly painful. And it is really wonderful to be able to say, I'm closing a door here. I've done everything I can to open the door, to make it work, to sit down. I'm willing to talk about anything. But when the relationship goes to contempt and anger and accusations and unwillingness to listen, because if you say anything, they'll say, you're just lying. And I'm going,
Yeah.
If you want to dismiss whatever I'm saying as a lie, then you can dismiss everything. Now we have no reason to talk. And I keep hanging around that, hoping someday it will get better. And finally, when you realize that the toxicity of an abusive relationship is such that they don't want it to get better. They actually thrive in the drama of the hostility and the false accusations and the anger. And I'm sure they don't even know their false accusations anymore. It's just defined a life for them.
Yeah.
But when God says, you can step away from this, I think it's awesome. And I think some marriages, I deal with marriages where I have said, yeah, you need to get out of this. A lifetime commitment, if both parties are not equally invested, just becomes the excuse to abuse somebody. You're going to abuse the person who's willing to lay down their life for the person who's willing to take everything out of a relationship they can take for their own amusement or their own inner pain and need that's got to be satiated by dominating someone else. There are marriages worth getting out of. So I'm not a commitment for commitment's sake. What's been joyful about this marriage is that Sarah and I have always been one about, we're going to get to us. I'm not going to make you my victim. I'm going to find a way. If you are unfulfilled in something, I want to find a way to fulfill you without denying myself, without, I don't mean denying myself in an appropriate spiritual way, but I mean with becoming less than I am. I don't ever want Sarah to be my victim, and I don't ever want Sarah to be something less than she is to satisfy something in me. I don't want either of those two things to happen. I mean, we learned that about 20 years ago. We've only been aware of that for the last 20. So for the first 26, there was a lot of being each other's victim. And there was a lot of, you know, someone just doing something for the other just to keep them happy. But it felt like it was crushing something in them. And for us to say, you know, the sweet spot and joy of our marriage in so many ways is finding that spot where we're not each other's victim and we can wholeheartedly give ourselves. When we do lay our lives down for the other, it's not to become less than myself. It's willing to lay down in the reality of who I am for the love of a woman who's been such a part of my life for so long and whose relationship I treasure more than any other. So when I hear people talk about, boy, the marriage commitment seems onerous. If it's just a commitment, I get it. But if you're having all the benefits of marriage relationally, I mean, you're living together, you're eating together, you're conversing together, you're having sex together, then what does marriage mean at the end of the day? That's where I go, I don't even know what marriage means anymore. You're already living like you're married. And I guess the only thing is I have the freedom to jump out anytime I want to. And I think for 90% of people, you will. If you have the option to jump out, you will. And I don't want people to have the option. I want you to grow through the pains in the relationship to get to life. Unless it becomes abusive, then yes, I want people to jump. I did a blog a while back about when divorce is a gift of God or something like that. It was about, you know, there are divorces that are worth celebrating because you've got out of a very painful, destructive, tormenting relationship. Great. And now let God heal and go on because God didn't create marriage so someone could abuse you for your whole life long. That's also why God didn't create family so you could be abused by somebody. You know, it really is finding a way to kindness and generosity and love and openness and communication, whether it's inside a marriage or inside a family. And where that breaks down, take your liberty. Always have a heart for God to bring it back together, but don't feel like you have to stew in the abuse of someone else. But also don't miss the opportunity to grow in the love for another human being. I have learned more about selflessness, and I don't mean in an abusive way, by learning to love Sarah. Here's the person that sees me all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And knows every emotion I had, knows my weaknesses, knows my failures, knows what makes me impatient and angry, forbears with me through my less mature moments of life. This is that woman who has laid down her life for me, who's been there when I've hurt, when there's nothing in it for her except just to be my friend in the midst of my pain. And she's there and has always been there. That relationship is the most treasured possession I have in this world. And I don't mean Sarah is my possession. I mean the relationship.
Yeah.
What we experience is better than any place we've ever lived, ever traveled. The adventure of loving a woman with all that love can mean and can be. And I've learned, I've said this a lot to people, I've learned a lot about God's love by the way Sarah loves. And I've often said, Sarah is the glue that holds this family together. Our relationships with our kids are awesome because of Sarah. Sarah knows how to love without manipulating and how to care and how to sometimes take it and not react and respond. Sarah gets the deeper realities of the love of the Father. And I've gotten to learn that by being with her. And that's that to me, that's the joy of a lifetime partnership. I don't know if you remember the old Wendy's ads Wendy used to have. What was it? Paris Hilton or something leaning over the hood of the car, you know, taking some big hamburger in her mouth. And who wants the same thing every night? And it was overly sexualized of the just, you want to just be free to do whatever you want in the moment. Does not lead to life. That's what I know. People who live like that, I've watched them over time. Yeah, they'll have some moments where it looks like they're having a lot of fun, and then their life implodes, and they go through horrible pain, long seasons of loneliness. Then they try to find someone else to love again, and it blows up in their face again. And so you look at people that need something different every night, and you're going, that's not the way to life.
Yeah.
But it also means marry well.
Yes.
It means find someone. I think that's what dating was all about. Find someone that you really, this person has the emotional integrity to stay on a journey.
Yeah.
And not just chuck it for convenience or not just crawl inside herself and hide to make something work that's not working for her. You don't want that kind of person either. And yeah, I think there are probably fewer of those kinds of people. Emotional maturity is kind of, we talked about the problems with adulting, you know, and I've got a lot of stuff I've got here that we want to get back to it someday, but there's not a lot of emotional maturity out there. And that's why I'm excited about people like you or whatever, or my opportunity to be with younger people, help them find an emotional maturity that will help them find a life partner that will allow them to experience a marriage. It's not just find somebody who will marry you and you'll have this life too. No, you, you have to do the work. You have to do the work internally and the work with them. And then 46 years later, you're eating a banquet of a meal in so many areas of our life because we've put in the work over those 46 years.
I love the picture that you just painted. And I think for Jess and I, like I was just kind of thinking as you were talking about like, how would I, like, what are some of the key characteristics that I love with Jess? And one of the biggest things for me is Jess has given me permission to learn what it means to live in relationship and not be on. I don't know how else to say it other than Jess and I are learning how to not be on with each other, to let our guards completely down, to be completely seen for who each other is, and to celebrate and enjoy that together. Like, I think about, like, even coming back to, like, circling back to the conversation about sexuality and in marriage, we can laugh. Like, we've had stupid things that have happened that, like, are just, they're just funny. Because and without this, like, need to be on or this need to perform or this need to prove yourself, it's gone. And so we can laugh when weird things happen or, you know, like, I remember... This might be a little TMI, but literally, like, we were in our rental home, our first house together, and accidentally ripped the towel hanger off the wall and, like, ripped out the drywall. And so I had to figure out, oh, great. I'm going to have to figure out how to patch drywall and put this thing back up and repair the wall, you know? But we could just laugh about it because it's like, well, that happened. Didn't see that one, you know? And so it just...
Something tells me when you said this might be too much TMI that you changed your story. Because ripping something out of a drywall is not where I thought you were going.
It was involved in the process.
Yeah, okay.
The joy of playing together, and in the midst of that,
I thought there was more to that. Because ripping that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, I hear you.
I remember even in the earlier days, just the permission of being in marriage. And the beauty of this is a person that I have committed to doing life with for the rest of my life, that we both, and especially Jess, like, that was the first thing that I knew. I was like, I'm going to marry this woman. And she's got the character and the depth that I want in a spouse, was when she told me that she turned down a multi-million-dollar breakout role in her dream industry because it would compromise her integrity. And I was like, wow, that is a woman that I could do life with.
Wow.
And she has remained true to that. She has not had the examples in her life of what healthy marriage and long-term relationship looks like. And yet she has committed in a very intentional and powerful way to learn how to do unconditional seeing and love for who you are lifelong marriage together. And has it been easy? No. Has she been perfect at it? No. Have I been perfect at it? No. But man, to be able to be in a relationship and to be seen and known and fully accepted for who God's created you to be, and to discover more of what that looks like as the relationship goes on, because we're closing in on 10 years, looking back, it's like, wow, Lord. Because I remember one of the first times I was preparing to propose to Jess, I went to this garden. And I was walking through this garden, and, like, for a long time, God wouldn't even let me go into this garden. And then eventually he did. And then I asked him, what is this garden? What does this represent to you? And he said, Kyle, this is Jess's heart. This is a representation of how I see Jess's heart. And there were some parts of it that were kind of tangled and wild and needed to be pruned and cleaned. There are other parts that were absolutely breathtaking. And then there were parts that were completely bare, where God was still planning on planting and growing and building new things. And he's like, Kyle, this is what I have for you to discover in the marriage with this amazing woman that you're considering committing your life to, is being able to do life in a garden like this and discover, to have new things grow, to help prune some things that might be a little wild or a little out of control, and to enjoy beauty that I've already created and built up in her. And we've been learning that. Thankfully, we've had other people that have come alongside of us to help us in that process, because it has not been easy. But, man, to not have to be on in life with another person is such a beautiful gift.
It is. And I think we learn it in that closest relationship. And like you say, Sarah and I have private jokes. Sarah and I have things we know about each other that no one else on the planet knows. And it's not always our strengths. Sometimes it's just, you know, weakness or a foible or something got, you know, twisted in your mind when you were young or whatever. We know everything, I think, about each other. I've said that before and then found out, oh, there's more to learn. But the image you just shared of a garden to be explored, we started this with the onerous burden of the commitment of marriage ruins a relationship. You just described to me what the commitment of marriage is, to explore together, not just her garden, but your garden, and build a garden together. And when people see that as onerous, and I know you said one of these couples you dealt with at one point were thinking about getting married just because of some kind of immigration issue that would, they weren't really wanting to get married yet, but might just go through the paperwork for that. And to me, it just said, you see how marriage is just a convenience? Mm. It's just paperwork for a convenience, or if it's your religious, you're doing it to take care of your guilt so you can have legitimate sex or whatever. You're really missing what began in the Garden of Eden, which was the man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. That's the joy and the promise. I used to use that thing in my wedding sermons. I can't even remember the word, it's been so long, but in a wedding sermon. And now I think about, wow, 46 years on, you're just beginning to discover what that's like, what that really means to be one flesh with someone. I think about you 10 years in, and I'm sure you're learning a lot and stuff. There are things, I think of all that I knew about Sarah after, so we got married in 75. So after 1985, it's just huge. My gosh. So yes, you have so much more adventures and life and joy to share together. And to me, that's what marriage means. It's not, oh crud, I've got to be stuck with this woman for the rest of my life or this man. And if that's what you're thinking, I'd be thinking, nah, not a good time to get married. But I'd also say maybe not a great time to keep having the investment of sexuality. You can't say it's just a physical act. Scripture keeps pointing away saying, there's more tied up in that than you know. And isn't the promise of every fairy tale love story that we will love you forever and will love you always? That's the hope of love.
Yes.
Marriage is just the way to make that real for you and another human being for all of your life, so that at each point in life, you get that whole freedom of not being on. And I was going to say, when you say not being on, I love being, I know I said earlier, you know, I'm kind of on from 8 in the morning till 10 at night when I travel, but I actually almost am as vulnerable and open where I'm at anywhere in the world. I don't protect myself anymore. Come look at this. Come look at all that's here.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I expose everything that Sarah and I know together, but it does mean that when I'm with people, I don't worry about what they think of me anymore. I don't worry about, you know, because I would rather be in an environment where they feel safe to share than I would be for us to just have these period of time I'm in your home a day or two where we're all pretending to be what we're not, which doesn't advance the kingdom of God at all. So I think the vulnerability you learn inside a marriage, when you begin to apply it outside the marriage in just not having to protect yourself from people, even who may be worth protecting yourself from, and if you're not emotionally whole enough to deal with abuse, then don't go there. But if you are, if you're willing to put some stuff out there, and if they reject you, you're still okay with that. It's not going to ruin your life. Then you're free to live in the world. And to have a partner alongside when you're doing that is the most amazing thing.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.